Here we are, the off-season off-season edition. It's off-season, so I got to get my verbiage and my mouth and my linguistics and everything in order. Yep. A little bit off tune right now, but anyway, we are here for the Audible. It's Wednesday. Alan Pupar with us, who writes for MiamiDolphins.com. Kim Bocamper here, and it's kind of now's the time where you kind of the post-mortem of the season. Everyone starts breaking down what went wrong, what went right. Where they need to go, all those changes, and things have already started to take place. And it's amazing, Alan, that in this football business is, season's over, but coaches haven't missed a beat. They just continue going and continue working. There's a lot of work to be done between now and draft day, and so it's an everyday deal for them pretty much from here on. Until after the draft.
No, it never ends. I mean, they're going to be spending the next several weeks looking back, as you mentioned, as
what happened
last year, what went wrong, who played well, who didn't, yep. Who do we need to keep, who do we need to move on from, what players do we need to target, and yep. It never ends.
Speaking of that, they've parted ways with the three players so far. Lawrence Timmons won't be back. Juwan James was not extended his fifth-year contract. And Julius Thomas, surprised by any of those moves?
No, can't say. Again, if you look at the dollars and what they got yep. for that amount of money, can't say any of those is a major surprise.
And so I saw the number. I was looking for it before we went in the air. If I'm not correct, do these numbers come together to about $21 million in cap savings?
That sounds about right. I know Juwan's fifth-year option number was 9.4.
Yep.
Timmons, not sure. Julius Thomas may
yep.
have been in the $6 million range.
Timmons had a two-year guaranteed deal,
correct.
But then when he went AWOL, that took the guarantee off the deal, which allowed them to step away from his contract, which I believe was somewhere $5, $6 million, somewhere in that ballpark. And Julius was probably somewhere in that same boat, so somewhere around there, right?
It became unguaranteed. And the thing with Timmons, too, is once he got back, he played really, really
yep.
well for the first few weeks, and then his production really
disappeared,
yeah.
And then in the last couple of weeks – kind of showed up a little bit after that, but really it was the first couple of weeks you thought, wow, this guy's really exactly what we expected, everything that was advertised, making plays, and then he just kind of fell off the face of the map. So the other thing the Dolphins have done, they signed future contracts for eight players. These players run the practice squad. Tevez Calhoun, quarterback Brandon Dowdy. Any surprise with Brandon Dowdy, or it's just another chance for them to look at him and see if he can move on? Now, here's a guy who you had on the practice squad all year last year. You go on, you get David Fales as your third string guy to back up Matt Moore and Jay Cutler, and kind of made you think that maybe Brandon Dowdy was kind of off their screen a little bit, but here he is back again.
Well, I think they see enough in him to bring him back and to see maybe is this the year where he's going to make
that leap
and
yeah.
really process things quicker, if that's the issue with him.
Yep.
I'm not quite sure. Obviously, there's something missing for the Dolphins
yep.
not to have trusted him. But obviously, again, they see something in him that it's worth a shot. And, again, there is no downside to
no
bringing
downside,
him back.
No downside, yeah, right. So Brandon Dowdy, tackle Sean Hickey, cornerback Tracy Howard, Malcolm Lewis, a wide receiver, another wide receiver, Drew Morgan, running back Brandon Radcliffe, and defensive end Jonathan Woodard, all signed future contracts. So they'll be here and get ready to come in and compete for a spot on the roster next year. The guy that probably jumps out to me with a chance to maybe make a little noise, maybe Drew Morgan. I think Drew played pretty well in the preseason, and he's been out there working with those guys. But he seems to be the guy that looks on there to be maybe the most interesting to me. But that's a long way away.
Yeah, and again, these are guys who were on the practice squad last year. So we need to temper our expectations
yep.
when it comes to any of them.
No
to
doubt.
Me, the one who might be interesting is Tracy Howard,
yep.
the former UM player.
Yep.
Played in a bunch of games with the Cleveland Browns
yep.
last year it was.
Yep.
So maybe there's something there. Again,
yep.
it's just a matter of like – throwing a lot of stones out there
yep.
and then maybe you hit on something.
Throwing it against the wall and hoping some of it sticks, right?
Exactly.
That's basically what the situation is. All right, so Alan, here we are. We wrap up the season. Disappointing 6-10. I think it's pretty easy to put your finger on what happened with this football team this year, basically from a game situation. To me, it's penalties, it's turnovers, it's mental errors. To me, that's kind of the nutshell about – the difference between this football team this year and the football team last year.
Yeah, Yeah, and then I think it's something else that needs to be pointed out is the offense was never right the whole season.
Yep.
I mean, even they got off to the 4-2 start,
yep.
and they didn't really look like
no,
a great team
no.
that should have been 4-2.
Yep.
As I said, the offense was never right. Jay Cutler, for whatever
yep.
reason, it didn't really pan out. Last year, they made steady progress with the offense, with Ryan Tannehill getting better and better and better every
mm-hmm.
week. And this year never happened. There were some spot games where the offense was really
yep.
good. You would think the New England game, the Jets game.
Yep.
But it just wasn't there throughout the whole season. And this was a team that had a very small margin for error because
yeah.
of that. So when the penalties started showing up, they just couldn't overcome
well,
that.
Yeah, and part of I think part of the big difference between this year and last year was that. I think this – look, last year they struggled with penalties. This year they struggled with penalties, but there were so many pre-snap penalties,
yeah.
so many – you know, and so many plays that moved the chains that got called back for holdings and those types of things that helped this football team. It just seems to me, Alan, I was talking about on the show the other day with John Congemi here, it just seemed like offensively this football and really the entire football team was fighting an uphill battle all year long. Even as you said, they got off to a, you know, record-wise got off to a pretty good start, but you knew that you're looking at that team going, hey, they didn't play like,
yeah.
they're not playing like a 4-2 football
yep.
team. They kind of smoke and mirrored their way through a 4-2 start, and then things really caught up with them and you know, all season they're playing catch up after that. And it seemed like every game they were playing catch up where
yeah.
this offense never really had a chance to be the offense they wanted to be. They had to be, you know, they had to, you know, they're playing from behind by 14 points or 17 or whatever. And defensively they couldn't pin their ears back because now they could run and run play action and do all those different types of things. So I think all those things – all those things, the turnovers, the penalties, all combined to really kind of tear the guts out of the offense and the defense this year.
Yeah, and again, we mentioned the fact that it seemed like every game they were behind, it's 7-0,
yep,
it's 14-0,
yep.
it's 10-3, it's 7-3. And that affects so many other facets of the game. So to me, I bring it back. The defense was nearly as good as,
yep.
as it could have been. And it wasn't without blame, but to me, I think you have to bring everything back
yep.
to the offense. Just flat out did not deliver.
Yeah, I got the organizational note here put on it. Those signed future contracts are reported, not official. In other words, they haven't sent out an official release, so we can't call it official, but it's official.
Okay, I thought I saw an official release on
well.
This.
Well, that's, you know, but, you know, you got
to. But it's, I mean, it's.
This came from Leon now.
It's
so. So it could be, those could be all wrong, or they could be all right. It could be official, but we're calling it not official. That's, I call that that's the Leonism
of
the program.
I'm going to say it's going to happen.
Yes, okay. The other thing is looking forward. Now, they had a press conference today with Mike Tannenbaum, Chris Greer, Adam Gase. They all talked. And I guess really the only – it's to me, we talked about it before the show. It's like that pre-draft press conference where, you know, yeah, we're going to – yeah, we got a pick in the – we got the 11th pick in the draft, and we're going to grab the best guy available. And that's really the only thing that comes out of those kind of deals. But so the press conference today with the general manager, the head of football operations, and the head coach – and I think the couple things that kind of came out to me in little dribs and drabs, one, the commitment of Adam Gase to the fact that Ryan Tannehill is going to
mm-hmm.
be healthy, ready to play, and there's no doubt he is our guy next
correct.
Year. And then I saw a little blurb from Chris Greer saying, well, hey, look, if there's a quarterback there that we like in the first round, it's a time that we make a move on it.
And
so
they,
if he's our highest rated, which goes the philosophy that every team says they have in drafting. I mean, look, we're not drafting by position. We're going to take the best player available. Well, if that player happens to be a quarterback at 11 for the Miami Dolphins, or if they move somewhere up and down in the draft and a quarterback is there where they pick, then I think Chris Greer pretty much left no doubt that they would probably make that move.
And it's interesting. He brought up an example that if the team was set at defensive end and they
yeah.
pick 11th and J.J. Watt's on the board, well, we're going to pick J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt was the 11th pick.
Yes.
And the Dolphins so happen to have the 11th pick. The thing is, what's the likelihood that you're going to have a quarterback at 11 that you're convinced is the best player on the board, but
yeah.
other teams before you would not
would
or did not?
Yeah.
That's probably a long shot.
Yeah, well,
standpoint.
It also, you know, you also look into the fact that, you know, those teams that may or may not need quarterbacks and how many of those guys are and how many come off the board before. So it's going to be like every offseason, it's going to be an interesting offseason. But, you know, the one thing I keep looking at, I keep looking back at the last two drafts you've had. And, you know, in 2016, you get Tunsil, you get Xavier Howard, you get Kenyon Drake, and you get Jakeem Grant. All those guys were impact players in this team. Now, Tunsil, I think you'd like to see him step up his game to another degree. Carew was another guy that came in that draft. And really, this was a year – I think this was a year, an important year for him to show what he could do and really, really kind of – Didn't make much happen with his opportunities there. But he's another guy that came out of the draft. Then you go to 2017, you look at Charles Harris, you look at Devin Gottschall, you look at Vincent Taylor, Cordray Tankersley, Isaac Asiata, who was on the practice squad. I mean, not on the practice squad, but inactive every game. Still waiting to see what his situation is. But you can also throw in there Jesse Davis, Chase Allen, two free agents that came to your team, and both started for a good part of the season. And I think of the two, I think Jesse Davis is a guy you look at and say, this guy's pretty much got him a spot somewhere in that offensive line next year with the move of Juwan James. Maybe he's your right tackle. Maybe he fills one of the guard positions. But I think that going into this offseason, I would assume that the Dolphins feel like he's going to be one of their starting offensive linemen next year.
One would think. I mean, he's done enough. The big question now is, it going to be right guard or right tackle? Because, I mean, he was pretty solid at both spots.
Yep.
So, obviously, it depends on what else they do along the line to go with him.
Yeah, but, I mean, as we're sitting here right now, because, look, if they draft an offensive tackle or an offensive guard with the first pick, with their first pick in the draft with the 11th pick, then it's certainly going to make a difference as to – you know, where Jesse Davis fits in there.
No, but no question.
He certainly at this moment right now, I think, is pretty much got his arms wrapped around one of those positions.
No question. And I want to go back to Tunsil because you mentioned him. And to me, looking ahead to 2018, that's a key guy right there.
No question.
He needs to become a complete stud at left tackle, which he wasn't.
Yeah, he's got to be, you know what, he's got to be a mean guy. He's got to be a tough guy. He's got to be, you know, he's got to be a guy that just, you know, is a bulldozer. Is a guy, his pass protection. Look, I'll give him this. This was his rookie year playing left tackle. Played left guard last year as a rookie. So his first time out there with extended period of time playing the tackle position. But I think it's safe to say, and I think he'd be the first to say, that he's got to get better next year than he was this year.
Well, right off the bat, he's got to cut down on the pre-snap penalties. Yep. There were way too many of those. But in pass protection, he actually looked pretty good for most of the year. I mean.
So that's where they're. And my point being, just by looking at those two drafts, if you can duplicate those two drafts where you came away with four guys that are pretty solid guys for you going forward in each one of those drafts, if you can add another four young guys in this draft that make the same type of impact that those guys did, I think you can see a foundation of young guys being built around this football team through the draft, through the way you want to get the job done, or free agency. And I'm not talking about free agency where you're buying, you know, veteran free agency, rookie free agency,
correct,
and those types of things. You really kind of see the foundation of what could be a young team going forward, and you've still got a lot of other guys out there that aren't that long in the tooth on this football team.
And there's another name you didn't mention from one of the previous two drafts. That's Raekwon McMillan.
Yes.
Who was looking very good in training camp until he went down with that ACL. And he's a guy – the Dolphins have a need at linebacker. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
And if he can come in and deliver as everybody hopes, that would be obviously a major
boost. Yeah. I guess the question to me with Raekwon McMillan coming back and with would be with Kiko Alonso is – Do they toy with those guys inside outside? Because I think most people probably would look back and say, you know, Kiko probably played better last year inside than he did outside here. And I was like, hey, Kiko in space to me I thought would be a better situation for him.
Yeah.
But mainly his problem, mainly it was coverage situations. But that's a look. This is a football team that if one thing they've got to do during the offseason – is if there's one thing they got to do defensively during the offseason, they got to figure out how to stop tight ends.
Oh yeah,
they've got to figure out how to get their coverage geared to the point where the tight ends just don't run free with them, because it's just been every time you play pedestrian tight ends and they're making big plays against you.
Yeah, and then you could go down the list of guys who hurt the Dolphins at tight end. I mean, Cook, Charles Clay, yep. Gronkowski. Gronk,
yeah, all those guys, yeah. So
week in, week out.
So, you know, so that kind of fits in with McMillan and Kiko and where they go, because Kiko's coming back. And then with Timmons gone, you got to find somebody in that other spot there.
Maybe that's your first-round pick right there.
Yeah, well, look, I've already kind of put my pick choices are, and you can kind of shift them in orders, would be quarterback, tight end, linebacker, offensive lineman, in particular a guard. And to me, you could juxtapose those just about any way you want in those top four spots, I think, would be kind of what you need. Let's go ahead and get some questions on here, Alan. What do you say?
Sure.
Duke Dennis always gets in here. Hey, Bo, are you comfortable with the secondary headed into next season? Look, obviously, you always want every unit to get better each and every year. I'd like to see him get a little bit better. I'd like to see him be a little bit more effective when it comes to taking the ball away. But from a personnel standpoint, where, you know, I think Xavier, certainly in that last quarter of the season, has proven that he can be a big-time cornerback, right, especially in man-to-man situations, with TJ and with Rashad at your safety position. I think you're pretty well set there, obviously. And then with Tank and Tony Lippett coming back and Bobby McCain, what he did, you've got some guys there that can compete at that other cornerback spot, which I don't think makes it I don't think that spot is high priority for the Dolphins going into next season. Now, I think they talked earlier about Matt Burke in one of his press conferences said they like to find that kind of tweener linebacker safety guy that can cover some tight ends and kind of resolve some of that tight end situation. I don't know if TJ they try to bulk him up a little bit, maybe get him to where he can be kind of a hybrid type of a guy and handle some of that chore. But there may be some changes in the secondary, but it certainly isn't high on my priority list going into this offseason.
No, I think they're very solid, and I'll take you a step further. When you mentioned Howard, you said he played well down the stretch. I would suggest he played well the entire season. There was a stretch where he was getting boxed out by players. Yep. He didn't get a position, or he didn't turn his head around quickly enough, yep, where he wasn't playing the ball well down the stretch. That became a non-issue.
Yeah.
I thought he was a complete stud in the last, let's say, 6 weeks. I think Tankersley showed a lot of promise.
Yep.
He was a rookie. Then he got hurt. That slowed his development. He's an intriguing guy to me. Bobby McCain, I thought, had a very good year. To me, the key for the secondary next year is going to be McDonald and Rashad, how they play together. Yep. Again, McDonald this year didn't play until the ninth game. That makes a difference.
And you figure both of those guys going through a training camp together, going through the preseason together, not having – hopefully we don't have anybody – suspended, either one of those two guys suspended or missing for whatever reason, injury wise or whatever. You got to think they're just going to get better playing together. And one thing I like about them, they can play a deep safety with either one of them. Yeah. They can play either one of them at the line of scrimmage. They both run support guys. So I'm safety wise or secondary wise. I'm feeling pretty good about that. Here's another one. Hey guys, would you accept the Patriots winning the Super Bowl knowing that Brady would retire, or Patriots lose the Super Bowl? So this is a hypothetical, interesting question. Hey, guys, would you accept the Patriots winning the Super Bowl knowing that Brady would retire, or the Patriots lose the Super Bowl knowing Brady will be back for another season? Well, I can tell you this. I don't give a crap who wins the Super Bowl. If this team's not in it, I could care less who wins the Super Bowl. So if the Patriots win another Super Bowl, I don't give a damn. So if they win a Super Bowl and Brady retires, I would take that scenario in a bat of an eye.
Changes the AFC picture a little bit, doesn't it?
And it makes you wonder, because I think there's a probably growing thought out there, which is just kind of floating around, is that when Brady retires, Belichick may follow him out the door, knowing that, hey, you know, I got a little reclamation project I got to do now, and I don't have my I don't think that guy's going anywhere for at least two or three more years.
Doesn't sound like it.
Unless he gets some major injury. But that guy just, you know, it's amazing to me. What's he been in, 18 years now, 17 years?
18 years.
I think, you know, when you look at the franchise quarterbacks going back probably at about the time of Dan Marino, or maybe just a little before Dan Marino, especially when all the rules have come into the game to protect the quarterbacks, you're a franchise quarterback. You're going to play 15 years in this league because they're going to ride you until, you know, they're going to tape you up and they're going to keep you out there as much as you can because they know how hard it is to find those guys. But here's a guy that's going 18 years and really looks like he's going to be a 20-year guy in the league because his game – if you can see a sign of his game going backwards, then let me know about it because I certainly haven't seen it over the last few years.
No, he's going to win the MVP. It's not a player in decline.
No, it's remarkable. And you know, he's had knee operations, he's had this, but he looks – He just looks healthy. He looks fit. He looks – maybe that diet and, you know, good maybe good living, maybe living in a mansion, you know, in 20 different places around the world. Does a guy good.
But here's the thing. Maybe he wins a Super Bowl this year and he's thinking to himself,
yeah.
What more can I do?
Yeah, but the guy just – you know, and I agree with that, but this guy, he just continues to be ultra competitive. You know, you see games where – You see games that you think are somewhat meaningless middle-of-the-season games, and it's not going well, and he's screaming and yelling and throwing things and this and that. So it's not like when you look at him that it's old hat and he's tired of it. I think the guy still loves playing the game. He's obviously playing at a high level, and he's probably making – what's he making, about $28 million a year, somewhere around there?
I'm sure he's doing okay financially.
He's doing fine, so, you know.
And his wife's doing okay
financially. Yeah, but so more – no, people don't – you know, that kind of money coming in, people aren't so quick to walk away from it. But, yeah, I think he's going to be around for at least a couple more years. New Breed 211 from Periscope. What do you think about picking tight end in the first or an O-line in the second round? If you get a tight end or an offensive line in the first round and the other in the second round, I'd be just as happy with that.
If there's a from the very little research I've done, I don't believe I've read or heard that there's a tight end coming out.
I keep going. Well, let's look at Stanford. They've been spitting tight ends out for the last half a dozen years, but evidently it's a drought for them this year. But that's it. I agree with you. Tight end, you don't see that guy out there that jumps out and says, you know, this is a guy you got to take in the top 15 picks in the draft.
I will throw out a name, though, that apparently the word out of Seattle is that Jimmy Graham is not coming back to the team.
Yeah.
Wouldn't mind seeing him down here myself.
Yeah, I don't know about that. You know what?
I'll take it. They need a down the field.
I understand that, but how many years has he been in the league? And his production fell off up in Seattle.
And scored a lot of touchdowns.
Scored a lot of touchdowns. I understand that, but I don't know. I just see the second coming of Julius Thomas there, you know. And not against Julius Thomas, but you bring an old guy in, you old guy that's going to let me get one or two more years in the league. You know, we saw it with Mario Williams. We saw it with Julius Thomas.
Let's check out.
I've seen about enough of that kind of stuff. I'd rather get a young guy that you got some growth with. If there's somebody available of that ilk,
absolutely.
If you go through and you don't find a guy anywhere in the draft, and you come out with and you sign him, then so be it. But I'm kind of over the guys that come out with one or two more years, and you kind of get the feeling when you see them here, they're like, ah, another contract. Let me make this money and let me move on south, right?
You're kind of bitter on that Julius Thomas move, aren't you?
No.
It was a good shot to give it.
What about Mario Williams last year?
Correct.
Same thing, right? I'm not talking about particular guys. I'm talking about guys that are at the end of their career, and you know they didn't play so well at the last place they were at. But you think maybe we can get them for a year or two and get them juiced up again. And you give them a nice contract, and they come, and they just don't live up. They don't play up to the potential or what you expected. Now, Adam Gase all year was saying, "Hey, he did everything I asked him to do. Yeah. We must not ask him to do much, but in one way or another." But anyway, it's that ilk. It's that, and I don't care if it was an offensive guard. I don't care if it was a linebacker. I don't care. Well, you throw Lawrence Timmons in the same boat.
Absolutely,
you know?
No question.
So these guys that are at the end of their career, let me get that last stop and that last paycheck. I'm a little sour on those guys.
Okay,
no matter what position they are, no matter what team they play for, no matter who. I just maybe I'm bitter because I wanted to get that one free year.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like it. Jimmy Graham is 31 years old.
Coach Shula was a little smarter. He said, no, you ain't going to come and steal money from us. Get out of here. So he's 31. And he's been in the league for what? So that makes him in the league for 11 years. Probably 10, 11 years, right?
Let's see here as we look quickly. 2010 was his first year. He's been in the league 8 years.
8 years.
Five-time Pro Bowl selection.
Okay. Periscope, Courtney, NJ11. Do you think the Dolphins should stay away from a free agent due to previous bad decisions? I'm not against the team going out and signing free agents. I think like most everybody, I think that, and I think we've seen this group here shy away from going out and spending that big money mm-hmm. on that big time free agent, and then not being able to go and fill the rest of your roster. So I'm not for those guys going out and spending, but they're going to pick up free agents. There's going to be someone from some other team that doesn't sign that they'll pick up, and I'm fine with those guys. But I'm also 100% into the whole, let's not break the bank on somebody, unless Tom Brady wants to come down here and finish his career, or Aaron Rodgers, or somebody like that.
You just said you didn't want anybody coming here for their last year of their career.
But we just talked about Tom Brady. I would make an exception for Tom Brady. Okay. Would you?
Sure.
Yeah.
But that wasn't my original premise. That was your premise.
Yeah, but I'm just, you know, I'm
no, that's Tom Brady's kind of a different
Tom Brady, different Julius Thomas, and Lawrence Timmons are different creatures than Tom Brady. Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
Drew Brees. Those guys.
Fair.
Those guys, I'd give them a little roll of the dice, no question about it. Carlos Rogiello, any new ideas on how we're going to scout from now on? A fresh new philosophical approach on drafting players.
Huh?
Well, let me ask you this. Carlos Rogiello, mm-hmm. how much do you think he knows about how they work in that office and go about scouting players and drafting players and picking players and evaluating players and everything that goes into it?
There's also not 17 different ways of doing it. It's just scout, evaluate, watch tape.
Yeah, I don't know, Carlos, what new ideas that you're – maybe you should send some ideas to us as to how you go about doing that. I mean, there are no surprises jumping up out of these anymore. It's not like back when the Dallas Cowboys first got computers and they were pulling guys out of nowhere that no one knew about. You know, it didn't take long for that everyone to get on board in that. So there's nobody out there that every team in this league doesn't know about and have an opinion on.
Correct.
One way or another. Now, one team may have one opinion, another team may have another opinion, but they all know everybody that's in the – they know everyone that's in the fishbowl, and they know exactly what they're all about. So, I don't know what else you want them to do when it comes to scouting. And
there will always be hits and misses. I mean, look, Tom Brady was 199th player pick, so.
Look at Zach Thomas, the fifth-round – I mean, look, you go on and on and on. John Randall didn't get picked, and he's in the Pro Bowl right now. I mean, in the Hall of Fame. So, it's for as much money, as much time, and as much effort they put into drafting players, it's still an inexact science.
Correct.
And it's always going to be that way. McCallad Jane. Bo, how would you address the discipline issue? They've got to find some way for players to feel like there's a consequence when they're on the field to making mistakes, penalties in particular. To me, they're an easy fix, but they haven't fixed it in 2 years, and they got officials out there every single practice. But I keep going back tonight, and I hate to keep going back, but I had one coach in this league, and it was Don Shula. And so at the NFL level, that's all I know. And I know this, 3rd and 10, you complete a pass for 15 yards for a first down and you get caught holding, you don't want to come over to the sideline and hear from Don Shula.
No.
You'd rather go to the other sideline. You don't want to hear. And so, but that's old school. That's Paul Brown. That's Chuck Knox. That's Don Shula. That's Tom Landry. That's the old school of coaches. I don't know if coaches can be that tough on these players now because of free agency and the ability of these guys to come and go, I'm not going to – guy yells at me too much, I'm going to go somewhere else.
But holding also to me is not really a discipline issue. If you want to talk pre-snap penalties where you're not focused enough, okay, fine, or you jump offside on a 4th-and-3 punting situation, that's one thing. And in that case, the only recourse you have is a guy, guy's not going to play.
Look, there's also discipline in that. Look, you know, I was watching the Alabama game the other day, and one of their cornerbacks, guy comes a little swing pass, comes up, and he's got to make the tackle, and the guy gets square, breaks down with his feet apart, chopping his feet, so whatever way this go, and he makes the play. You know, holding is the same thing. You got to get your body in front of guys.
Yeah.
You know, and if you got guys that aren't disciplined enough to get their body in front and they're kind of reaching out, then it's all part of the same thing. It's all part of the
is
same.
Is that discipline or is that talent, though? I mean, because a lot of the holding penalties occur when you're beat on a play.
I'll put it to you this way. If you've never seen the guy do it one time, then it's talent.
Okay.
If you see the guy do it more times than not, but then in a game situation, then you're playing Cleveland, and all of a sudden the guy's just kind of reaching and leaning, then, yeah, it is a discipline situation. Instead, you guys just said, look, I'm not, you know, it's an effort. It's all those types of things.
But see, to me, I come from the perspective that a lot of those holding penalties, pass interference, or all that is because you're beat on a play. Yep. And on that play, you didn't do something physically correctly as opposed to having a mental mistake.
But there's, you know,
there's some of each.
Yeah. Look, technique and all those things, too, to me, are a form of discipline. You got to be disciplined to do them. You got to be disciplined to make yourself do it when you don't feel like doing it. So that's.
But the only way you can address it basically is you don't give that guy as many snaps. But if it's, for example, Ndamukong Suh, who's a fabulous player, but he's got a nasty habit of jumping offside, what are you going to bench Ndamukong Suh?
You keep pounding into him. Ndamukong Suh, and you can flip over to the offensive side and look at Jarvis Landry.
Okay.
You know, Jarvis comes with, you know, he's, you know, certainly one of the guy kind of stirs that offense, and emotionally one of your guys. He's a guy you want on the field all the time, but there are times where he's going to put you in a bad situation with penalties and types of things that are easily those to me are a lack of discipline. Some of those are lack of discipline. What we saw Sunday in the end zone was lack of discipline.
That was bad. That was
right.
Bad.
So,
but here's the thing is because I was hearing on the radio today a big discussion about Jarvis and his temperament and all that.
Yep.
He's a tough case because what makes Jarvis Landry a special player?
That's what
he plays with such incredible passion and fire.
That intensity, the intensity is what makes him the player he is.
And unfortunately,
that intensity makes him the guy that goes off the handle.
Okay.
And so it's you know, some guys you just take the good with the bad.
Correct.
And that's the way it is.
So with Jarvis, do you tell him, listen, I don't want that, and then take the risk of you taking away what makes him so good?
I think you try to say, Jarvis, we need to we need to get away from these things. We need to get away. But the last thing you want to do is see the guy playing half. You don't want a half of Jarvis Landry on the field. You want everything Jarvis Landry gets you on the field. And so, and unfortunately, I think through Jarvis's career. Look, I've been on the sideline with Jarvis, and I've looked in his eyes. That guy gets into a dark place.
Oh,
man.
Absolutely.
He's focused. It is what it is. I think that Jarvis is going to be that guy his entire career.
Sure.
You'll hope that he just can minimize it a little bit.
Agreed.
King Edlin, Periscope, we're going to wrap it up with him. Bobby McCain gets the most improved for me this year. I like that. Bobby McCain, I think, probably improved as much as anybody on this football team, but I don't think you can overlook Kenyon Drake. And what he did, his improvement, the more he got to play in this offense.
Yeah, I'd give my vote to Bobby McCain. The difference, and I agree with you with Kenyon Drake, is the thing with Drake is last year he just didn't get the opportunities because the talent was always there.
Yep.
Whereas Bobby McCain played a lot last year, and this year his game came up big time.
Yeah, leaps and bounds. I mean, you know, he going into the season, or for most of the season, you figure Bobby's an inside cover guy.
Mm-hmm.
He proved that he can be an outside corner
and
do a good job out there too. So, yeah, I could go either way with those two guys. So, anyway, Alan, that's it, man. Been a pleasure, my man.
Always.
All right, you can catch Alan's stuff. You still how often do you post now on Dolphins.com?
Pretty much every day.
Pretty much every day through the off season.
Like today, I have tough two kind things, of things. Yeah.
So today, going to be tough digging stuff out of the ground here for a couple weeks, right?
Well, we analyze the press conference.
There you go. For 2 weeks?
Pretty much.
Okay.
No, there'll be other stuff. Come on.
All right, that's going to do it for the Audible today. We will be back on Friday. We sure what time are we know? We have any idea, or are we just guessing? We're going to be on Friday at some point, so go ahead and keep an eye out for us, and we'll pop up somewhere there on your device one way or another. For Alan Poupart, I'm Kim Bocamper. We'll see you guys on Friday. Take care.